frankly, I will tell you this because I know your feelings about Carol Becker, but back in 2009, I was a reporter and I was interviewing her about the referendum that would have abolished the Board of Estimate and Taxation and given the job to the city council. And in the middle of an interview, she stopped and said, "You know, you should be on the Board of Estimate and Taxation." And I said, "Well, Carol, I couldn't do that. I'm a reporter. I can't do that sort of participation in public life." But it planted a seed.
That was a brave answer, Steve Brandt, because saying that Carol Becker planted the seed for you to run for BET, that's a brave thing to say on the Watch Live podcast. This is the Wedge Live Podcast, and my guest today is Steve Brandt, who's running for the Minneapolis Board of Estimate and Taxation. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you.
And just a little background for our audience, we just went through 20 minutes of trying to get this set up. Quite an ordeal. How do I sound?
Talk a little more.
Steve Brandt, candidate for BET.
Okay. It's a borrowed headset, so I'm
louder?
Turning it up by squeezing the top of it.
And now Steve and I are best friends.
Absolutely.
Okay. So let's start with something that's not necessarily BET related, but just talking about how you have experienced the last year in Minneapolis as a resident. You know, it's been a rough year with the pandemic, with the police murder of George Floyd last summer, and the unrest, and continuing concerns about the economy, public safety. Just where are we right now? How do you feel about Minneapolis? And what's your outlook for the future?
I think this is the most fraught time since I've lived in Minneapolis, and that goes back 44 years in this location, and even longer if you go back to when I started at the U. I have never seen this combination of events happen, both a health event that had an incredible impact on the city's tax base, and a human tragedy that was an unacceptable violation of civil rights and also posed a huge financial issue for the city. And I think our politics are fractured. You know, it used to be 30, 40 years ago, the competition was between Republicans and Democrats, and now it seems to be between Democrats and Democrats largely. And I am hoping that we can somehow find common ground. I've been over to George Floyd's memorial site at least a half dozen times. I wanted to do my own visit just to witness, and I wanted to I did voter registration walks with some of my friends last summer, and also went there the day the trial started, and went there a few days after the verdict was announced for the events that happened there. I understand what emotions are going through the people's minds, or at least I understand on a surface level. I know that there's a continuing issue of what should be done with that intersection. But I don't think you can hold the neighborhood and the larger commuting infrastructure of the city hostage indefinitely. So I would like to see a meeting of the minds and a permanent memorial. And John, that's sort of a rambling answer.
It's okay.
It was all over the place.
It was a big, broad question. And I was just going to let you run with it.
I mean, I made it through the pandemic unscathed, thank goodness. Got tested several times because I was out as an election judge interacting with people with pretty good protection. I spent time doing a parish food program that had brought me in contact with a lot of folks. And even though I was fairly well protected for that, I thought it was prudent to get tested and got immunized relatively early, and wish everyone would.
So let's talk about the Board of Estimate and Taxation. We can come back to some of this other stuff a little later. So imagine you knocked my door and I'm loosely paying attention to politics, and you got to grab my attention in 30 seconds, convince me the Board of Estimate and Taxation is relevant, and I should try to figure out who the best candidate is when I'm voting in November. Convince me the BET is relevant to my life and you're important.
John, are planning to vote, I assume, this fall. And when you get to the ballot, you will find a line for the Board of Estimate and Taxation, which is the most obscure position on the ballot. And people agree with that when I'm out interacting with them and making my pitch. The reason it's important is that it sets the city's property tax limit, and that affects you whether you're a homeowner or a renter who pays property taxes indirectly through your rents, or even a business owner. And I think it's important that we replace the two incumbents who are stepping down with a combined 6 years of experience between them, with people who have adequate knowledge of city finances. And both incumbents are supporting me for that reason. They feel that I have the tools to do the job, even though we are not necessarily in the same place politically. We do study city finances. And I believe that the Board of Estimate and setting of the property tax level each year is important to setting our city's agenda. And it's a balancing act between the needs of the city and the ability of homeowners to pay. And some years it's relatively easy to have a hefty property tax increase if the valuation of the city has gone up sharply, as it has in recent years when valuations have risen by 8%. And some years it's going to be painful to agree to a tax increase, particularly in the year that's coming up, the Pay 22 taxes, which is just before those of us who are running for the board will be taking office, whoever is elected.
So you mentioned the two incumbents who are on the BET. And so watching them a little bit, they've got a... they prioritize low taxes, I think, is what I would say about them. And they have cast what appeared to me as protest votes against levies in previous years just because their number one priority is low taxes. They think taxes have gone up too far, too fast over the last several years. And they've endorsed you. Would you say that you're in line with their thinking on this issue? Or are you going to cast similar votes to them, you think, if you're elected?
Well, I have to say that I lived through the R.T. Ryback era, where for his first two terms, most of the property tax increases that were approved were 8% increases. The city didn't fall apart. When we got to the recession of 08, 09, there was a pushback and he had to moderate his position. But he had the advantage of robust growth. The city's tax capacity, which is the value of property against which the levy is applied, has risen by an average of more than 8% in the past 10 years. And I don't think that's a, I think that blunts the impact of a tax increase because you have new construction to help absorb the increase in taxes. For example, Minneapolis has added $1.5 billion in apartment value in just the last 2 years. Now, that may not continue because of various other factors that are under consideration right now. It may be a one-time surge, and I would hope that we would see some continuance of it because creating new housing opens up housing that may be more affordable for other folks. But in a circumstance where you have healthy growth in the tax base, I don't have a problem voting for tax increases. I think we need to be somewhat cautious in the coming year. And the reason for that is that the city's tax capacity, which is essentially the market value translated through the state's property tax classification system that treats different properties differently. It penalizes rental properties. It penalizes commercial properties in relation to homesteads. The tax capacity has gone up between 2020 and 2021 by only 0.13% after going up 8% annually for the previous period. That means that there's not going to be that growth to absorb property tax increases in 2022 in particular, and because commercial property has actually contracted in value, especially downtown, because of the pandemic, undercutting the cash flow of downtown buildings, and that's how they're valued on their income stream. The burden is going to shift in 2022 to homeowners, and it's particularly and to renters. Because rental values have continued to increase. And it's going to particularly be an issue on the north side, where people can least afford higher property tax bills, and where a lot of black and brown homeowners and renters live. And those people pay property taxes regardless of whether they pay it through their escrow with their mortgage or whether they're paying it through their rent. And so we've seen some increases in the vicinity of 23% in average assessment in the Fifth Ward over the last 2 years. And in my area, the growth is not happening like that. And so that means they're going to bear a greater share of the property tax increase that would happen in 2022. And so I guess my answer is short term, I think there's cause for moderation. Next year, the increase is scheduled to be 5.35% in the 5-year financial direction that the council adopted. But I think in the long run, as long as there's good growth in the tax base, we can afford to raise taxes to cover increasing costs of government.
Okay. Well, that answer was reassuring in the sense that it's not the misleading answer that Carol Becker, or the misleading explanation that Carol Becker will often give about how taxes are just running away out of control. We can keep this one short. And your previous answer convinced me you do understand how the property tax levy works in a way that other people do not. But again, 30 seconds, you have to make me understand how the property tax levy works in a way that doesn't mislead me into thinking things Carol Becker wants me to think, for example. So go.
Well, the property tax levy is the amount of money collected by city government. It's divided into the market value of the city. A tax rate is created, and it's applied to the individual value of your property. And that all rolls up to the aggregate collection.
Okay. I think your previous answer was maybe better, even though it was longer. I was frustrated watching the DFL BET candidate. There was one candidate who gave an answer that, and I think I understand how the property tax levy works, but after his answer, I felt like I didn't understand how it worked. So,
well, I will say this, in the election this year, there's lots of background issues that are on people's minds, whether it's police reform or the comp plan or other debates that we don't really have a vote on as a board of estimate. Our powers are strictly financial to set the tax rate and to authorize borrowing for infrastructure projects and other city long-range spending. And a lot of people who are running, I think, are trying to make the case that they will use the position to affect those issues. And there's really not an avenue to do it. If you look at the city's charter, that's the way it is. Now, I think there is room for greater tax fairness in our system in Minnesota, but that's a state level ask. And you need to get the city council behind you if you're going to go down that road. I would like to see a system that's less onerous for renters. Right now, 1% of your home's value becomes your tax capacity if you are a homeowner. If you're a renter, it's 1.25% of value. I should say the landlord, the calculation is 1.25% of your home's value becomes your tax capacity. And that then, of course, ripples through people's rents. It's hard to create affordable housing if you're penalizing people for in a way that you're not taxing property owners who own their homes.
Let's talk about your transition from journalist to candidate for office. I imagine it's not fun being a candidate for office. It doesn't look fun to me. Being an elected official doesn't seem fun. You're retired. Why do you want to do this with your life? You could be, I don't know, you could be fishing, you could be hiking, you could be enjoying the outdoors.
Well,
what compelled you to do this? BET is an obscure office, not wide ranging powers. So why disrupt your life and do this?
John, I'll give you an illustration of how much it disrupts your life. Last year, I mostly recreationally biked about 2,300 miles. This year, I'm barely at 150. If you're a reporter, you spend a lot of time in the corner of the room observing, and sometimes you disagree internally with what you see, and sometimes you internally applaud it. And I built up a fair amount of expertise in the city finances in the years I covered City Hall and in the years I covered city neighborhoods, the years I covered the park board. And I feel like that's something I can put to good use. And so just before I left the Star Trib, I applied for a position sitting on the city's Capital Long Range Improvement Committee. And that, as you probably know, recommends infrastructure priorities to the mayor and city council, things like firehouses and street improvements and bike lanes sometimes, pedestrian safety, city buildings, street reconstructions. And I found I sort of enjoyed getting in the weeds. We review 130 different projects each year extend over a 6-year period, and we rank them. And I felt like I was contributing. And between that and my background, actually reading the city's budget from cover to cover when I was a reporter, asking probably hundreds of questions of the city's budget director, felt like I had an expertise that shouldn't go to waste. And frankly, I will tell you this because I know your feelings about Carol Becker. But back in 2009, I was a reporter and I was interviewing her about the referendum that would have abolished the Board of Estimate and Taxation and given the job to the city council. And in the middle of an interview, she stopped and said, you know, you should be on the Board of Estimate and Taxation. And I said, well, Carol, I couldn't do that. I'm a reporter. I can't do that sort of participation in public life. But it planted a seed. And I was actually, when I retired at the end of 2016, planning to run in 2017. And because David Wheeler said he was planning to step down, and then he changed his mind, which is his right to do. And I didn't get into the, I wasn't in the game to try and oust an incumbent. And so I waited my turn, and I had pretty much thought I had gotten it out of my system. And then David called me late summer and said, I'm not running. You should think about it. And frankly, I went back and forth for weeks because I had a good retirement. And I didn't, you know, you're right. Running for public office is a major inconvenience in your life. My wife is in the background and she would verify that. She's had to pick up the load, but it's a chance to do service after years of observing on the sidelines and using some expertise that I've built up.
That was a brave answer, Steve Brandt, because saying that Carol Becker planted the seed for you to run for BET, that's a brave thing to say on the Watch Live podcast.
Yep. And as you know, as I've told her and as I said in my speech to the GFL convention, she supports me, I believe, because she believes I have the tools to do the job. But we disagree fairly fundamentally on some issues like policing and the comp plan, and it is what it is.
So, I enjoyed that 2-minute introduction of yourself to the DFL convention because I think you took 20 seconds out of it to sort of explain the Carol Becker endorsement. So I had some perverse enjoyment out of that, I have to admit.
I want to address one issue head on. Several of you have told me that you're reluctant to vote for me because I'm endorsed by Carol Becker. I want to make clear that Carol and I have significant policy differences on several issues, as I've explained to her. But as a four-term member of BET, she knows what the job takes and she supports me because she knows I have the right stuff.
So on your website, you say you've knocked doors for 3 DFL-endorsed local candidates post your career as a journalist. And I'm curious who those candidates were that got you out knocking doors.
The first one I knocked on doors for was Ray Dean, who ran for mayor in 2017. I supported Ray because he seemed like the one person in the field who would get out of bed every morning trying to figure out how to improve the lives of people in Minneapolis who are not thriving. Then I next year supported Mark Hazy for county attorney. And I was influenced in that in part by my daughter-in-law, who is a criminal justice reform advocate. But I sort of came to Mark also on my own. And I think he was enunciating some values that have been employed in places like Philadelphia by reform prosecutors. And then the third person I supported, and the only person I've supported who has won, is Andrea Jenkins. And I supported her when she ran to replace Elizabeth Glidden because I knew that she knew the ward. And I was a ward resident. And as a ward resident, Will, you have occasion to interact with your council member's office and found her to be responsive.
Do you think ideology matters on the BET? For example, the current public safety debate that we're having, there's one side that feels very strongly we need to rebuild MPD, fairly quickly, hire a lot more cops. There's another side that wants to aggressively push for alternatives to armed law enforcement. And you could say that the BET has no role in that debate, but I can imagine a scenario in December, in November, late in the budget season, where you're setting the maximum levy, and members of the city council come to you and say, the mayor has set the levy too low. We don't want to cut these other programs, but we would like to fund these alternative public safety programs. And we need the levy raised to do that. So we need you to vote with us to raise the levy. So it kind of does matter from my perspective, ideologically speaking, where BET members are in that regard. What do you think about that? And where are you in the public safety debate?
John, as you can tell, in the candidates I've supported, I skew toward the liberal side ideologically. But when it comes to the Board of Estimate, I'm very much a pragmatist. I don't think that fiscal decisions, well, they do have an impact on what the city can do, obviously. But I am one of those who would prefer to see the city examine alternatives to policing, because the current way of doing things not only is causing a lot of pain for Black and brown residents, but it's cost us $47 million in the last 2 years in two big settlements. So it's a financial issue as well as a human rights issue. I would like to explore vigorously alternatives that employ specialists who are not police to deal with populations such as mental health needs, calls that involve mental health needs, calls that involve homelessness, calls that involve chemical dependency, and don't require necessarily a badge and a gun. In some cases, those folks have a bad reaction if they see a cop show up. Having said that, I don't see a city without a substantial number of people with a badge and a gun and the power to arrest, because I'm not naive. And I think that we should move slowly in the direction of these alternatives, test them to make sure they work. Certainly, the CAHOOTS program in Eugene, Oregon has a 30-year history of suggesting that some of these approaches are effective. And I think that you roll them out slowly, you try them one precinct at a time, and then you make decisions about how many cops you need based on the call load for people who need a badge and a gun. And so that's how I'd approach things. And I do support the reform agenda that has been pursued for policing at the state capitol.
So do you support the public safety charter amendment? I'm curious.
I'm sorry, I can't.
Do you support the public safety charter amendment that's going to be on the ballot in November?
You know, John, I don't have a problem with the creation of a public safety department. I don't have a problem with the creation of a commissioner over that department, but where I have a problem is giving any greater power to the city council than it now has. I don't think a police department works well if it has multiple bosses, and particularly if it has 13 bosses on the council and the mayor. I think the mayor has to have, along with the commissioner of public safety and or police chief, day-to-day operational control over the department. And so for that reason, I'm not supporting that particular amendment, even though I'm sympathetic to the larger cause.
I mean, there is the argument that the fire department still functions with the council having policy and legislative control over the fire department. You could say, oh, there's 13 bosses of the fire department, but I think the fire department still goes out and puts out fires, and the chief still like makes the calls on that. I don't think the council is looking to get involved with managing things day to day, but larger policy questions for something like the police department, what would be the problem with having the council?
John, I think that the council's role should be limited to legislating ordinances when it comes to policing, doing the budget when it comes to policing, and then doing oversight hearings. But you don't, you often have council members trying to increase patrolling in a given area of their ward. I've never heard of the council members putting pressure on the fire department to change how they approach medical emergencies and fire suppression.
So, go ahead. Sorry, were you done?
I'm done. Yeah.
Okay. So, so using your experience, you've covered City Hall, right, in Minneapolis? Is that true?
Yes.
So what do you think about the strong mayor proposal? We've heard the phrase 14 bosses come up in regards to that in addition to public safety. I am deeply skeptical of the strong mayor proposal, but I'm curious what you think as a longtime observer. How should Minneapolis government be structured? Should we move to a strong mayor system?
I think that we should move to a stronger mayor system. You've probably seen the infamous map diagram of the lines of authority in Minneapolis City Hall that was done by cartoonist Dick Gindin back in, I think, the 90s. And it looks like a Rube Goldberg contraption. And I generally favor a stronger mayoral system and having department heads responsible to the council for the things that are the council's purview, such as budget and shaping ordinances and so on. But I think you every other type of government practically, the state, the federal, and so on, county government, as one single executive, and I think that's more a more efficient way to do government.
Efficient is not always better. I mean, I heard, so Trudy Maloney, who used to work for the mayor in Minneapolis like decades ago and now works as the council, manages the city council in St. Paul, like helps them, says that when she was in Minneapolis, She wanted every day for them to, there to be a strong mayor system in Minneapolis. Now that she's in St. Paul, she sees the beauty of the Minneapolis system. There are policies and programs that we have in Minneapolis that came decades before they arrived in St. Paul. So there's some creativity, there's innovation that comes from having 13 people involved with different priorities, hashing things out. And you could say the buck stops with that chief executive, the mayor, if they're ultimately in charge. But the buck stopping there could also stop some good things.
I think that largely from what I've seen over the years, those creative ideas and programs bubble up from below, from the department heads and their division heads, rather than come from the council down. Problem, I think, is what happens when you get conflicting direction as a department head from two different council members who are leaning on you to do things that are two different, sending you in two different directions. Say you're the public works department head, and you've got the public works committee chair leaning on you to go one direction, and the budget chair who controls your budget leaning on you to go in the other direction. That's why I think a number of people, we've seen a real exodus of department heads from Minneapolis city government in the last year. I think that's one factor in people leaving.
I think what you do in that situation is you say, I mean, we only take direction from the council as a body. Taking direction from individual council members, I already think is a problem and shouldn't happen. It does happen, and I'm not sure it'll stop happening. Like Lisa Goodman, for example, gets very interfere when it comes to the public works department. And she is supporting the strong mayor charter amendment. So I don't think she thinks it limits her power. She'll still be interfering. She'll be here the next 20 years interfering. So
I think Lisa is one of a kind.
Okay.
In terms of the vehemence that she brings to public policy.
She will have power no matter what structure the government has.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
And part of that power, frankly, is her tenure. I mean, she knows the levers of power in city government, and she knows the players, and she knows the back channels. And that's what experience brings you.
She can tell the public works director, I will be here tomorrow and 10 years from now and 100 years from now, so you better do what I say.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe I have come to the end. I think at the end, I will give you a chance, one final chance, Steve Brandt, to renounce and reject Carol Becker's endorsement. Will you take that opportunity?
I'm not going to do that, John. I've appreciated the philosophical debate. I understand perfectly well why you and others have problems with Carol. But I think those issues primarily don't have anything to do with how I would approach the Board of Estimate and Taxation. I will say that I think I talked to Carol once at the very beginning of before I even decided to run, just to see how do you run a campaign for the Board of Estimate and Taxation, a low visibility position citywide. And I got some good tips, but Carol hasn't even given me a campaign contribution, nor have I asked for one, because I'm working through my circle of friends. Generally, I'm trying to avoid in my campaign being beholden to people who will either on the next park board or the next city council or in the mayor's chair, because my job is to step back as a citizen representative on the Board of Estimate and make the best decision for the folks who sent me there. And there was a certain amount of idealism, I think, that was set up. I believe it was a populist idea when our charter was adopted and people said, we're going to have two directly elected members on this Board of Estimate and Taxation to sit alongside the full-time elected people at City Hall to look out for our interests and to look over their shoulders and to make sure things they're doing meet the reasonableness test. And so I like that populist idea. And I think that's why the people of Minneapolis, when given the chance to can the Board of Estimate back in 2009, said, no, we want to keep it.
Okay. Are there any other things you would like to tell people need to know about Steve Brandt or the Board of Estimate and Taxation as we close out the episode here?
I'm sorry, about Steve Brandt in...
Is there any final thoughts about Steve Brandt or the Board of Estimate and Taxation or your campaign that you want people to know before we close out the episode?
Okay. Well, I guess... I'm a runner, 47-time marathoner. I like to bike long distances. I cross-country ski. Lucky enough to have a cabin in Wisconsin because I had a good union job for 40 years. Love to garden, grow vegetables, grow flowers. Very involved in my neighborhood. Helped get the 40th Street Greenway, now known as the River Lake Greenway, built. It was my idea initially, and now it stretches across the city. Helping to do the same thing on the north side and northeast with the Great Northern Greenway, was one of the leading catalogers of racially discriminatory deeds for the Mapping Prejudice Project. I've been active in my church in efforts to try and improve the legal situation of undocumented folks who are in Minnesota, both in terms of things like driver's licenses at the state level and getting DACA status made permanent for those folks at the federal level. So those are some of the things that trip my trigger.
Do you have a pet, a cat, a dog, a fish?
We have had a series of cats for about 40 years. We're getting to the age where the question is, do you replace the aging cat you have when that cat meets its end or not? My wife just said she thinks we should, but you know, in 10 years, we could have health issues and be in an apartment and need to, having a pet can complicate that.
Do you have plans to move to an apartment from your, you live in a single family?
No plans, but it could be that in 10 years, I'll either for health reasons or because my wife would be lobbying for it to move to an apartment or a condo or some other style of living.
I'm tempted to get into like a debate about, or not a debate, but a conversation about the 2040 plan in housing, but I won't because that'll just go on forever.
Well, I think 2040, I think our tax base needs those higher density buildings around the city to help shield homeowners from tax increases.
That's a point. That's a point of agreement, Steve. Should we end?
I mean, I just had that argument with somebody who lives this morning with somebody who lives kitty corner from the old Curran site where it broke ground this week on a 5 or 6 story building, and she was arguing. My neighbor was arguing against density, and I was saying, "Look, they're going to help pay our taxes."
Yeah, and it also provides people a place to transition to a different size of housing as they need and stay in the city, stay in their neighborhood potentially.
Right.
Okay. Well, Steve, I enjoyed this conversation. I appreciate you coming on the show, even though I've teased you quite a bit.
I've seen a couple teases, but if there are others, I'm glad I didn't see them.
I did a Venn diagram. I don't know if you saw the Venn diagram. It was just a big circle shaped like Carol Becker's head and then your tiny head within the Carol. Just to point out that you've been endorsed by Carol Becker. And before people think I'm mean, Carol Becker tried to steal the name Wedge Live. Of course I'm going to be very passionate about that.
I utterly understand that. Okay. I don't know what she was thinking.
Yeah, that was self-destructive behavior, I think. Okay, Steve, thank you again. We're going to end the show. This is the Wedge Live podcast. My guest has been Steve Brandt, candidate for Board of Estimate and Taxation in Minneapolis. He's going to be on the ballot. Did you file yet, Steve?
I'm going to file tomorrow. I thought I'd avoid the rush today, and I was busy putting together campaign signs.
Yeah, I heard 26 candidates filed, but Steve's going to be on the ballot in November. I'm John Edwards, your host, and this is the end of the show.
This is a real thing.
None of you have the balls to stop this. Stop this.
I've got plenty of time. I have nothing else going on today.
We're in the Wedge neighborhood right now. 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 Right now.